I have a plan to give startup businesses $50,000 tax deduction. I have a plan, $6,000 for young families for the first year of your child's life. I have a plan offering a help with down payment of $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs.
That's about it. Show over.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York on WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Be careful down there in New Orleans. Hurricane headed your way. Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. And Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. It's on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, very quickly, before we get to our guests and our special post-debate coverage today, no great surprises or problems for voters that I was able to find, at least so far, during Tuesday's final congressional and statewide primary elections of the season, which were held in Rhode Island, Delaware, and New Hampshire this week. There was a problem discovered during early voting in Delaware, where more than 750 Democratic voters had problems voting when they were told that they were ineligible to do so because their registration was apparently missing a party affiliation, even though they had registered as Democrats. The state's Department of Motor Vehicles described the problem as a, quote, clerical error. That error in the very blue state seems to be tied to their recent move to automatic voter registration there. And officials vow to fix the problem for the state's next primary elections, where primaries are open only to partisan registered voters. Hopefully, none of that will cause a problem, however, for voters in this November's general elections in the state. But once again, Desi Doyen, hi.
Hi.
As we have been telling people all season long, check your registrations. Check them now. Make sure you are registered as you think you are.
And please, please, please tell everyone you know to also check their registration too, especially young voters who are just now getting acquainted with how all this stuff works.
If any noteworthy new problems come to light in either Rhode Island, Delaware, or New Hampshire, including with tallies in the coming days, we will, of course, let you know. But otherwise, that concludes the 2024 primary election season. We hope you enjoyed it, and thank you for participating if you did. And all of that, of course, comes not a moment too soon with Tuesday night's huge events in the presidential election. As you know by now, Taylor Swift has endorsed Kamala Harris for president. Also, in other news, Kamala Harris and the Republican former president turned convicted criminal Donald Trump held a debate at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, which, from my vantage point, looked much more like a murder than a debate. Maybe that's just me. We'll find out what our guests think momentarily. As AP reported on Tuesday night, Kamala Harris pressed a forceful case against Donald Trump in their first and perhaps only debate before the presidential election, repeatedly goading him, and he repeatedly took the bait that she threw out for him in an event that showcased their starkly different visions for the country on abortion, immigration, and American democracy. Now, by different visions, I think AP means that, well, she has one. He's just kind of making it up as he goes along, though perhaps this line from the debate best sums up all of his various campaign positions in just one fine turn of phrase.
She wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens that are in prison.
I think that includes just about everything that makes up the Trump campaign this year in one single four-second line. Thank you very much, sir. The Democratic vice president, for her part, provoked Trump with reminders about his 2020 election loss that he still denies, delivered derisive asides at his false claims on all manner of things, and sought to underscore the Republican former president's role in the Supreme Court overturning the national right to abortion 2 years ago, which on Tuesday, Trump falsely claimed yet again that everybody, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals alike, all somehow wanted them to do.
In over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. No exception even for rape and incest. A survivor of a crime of violation to their body does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral. And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body. You want to talk about this is what people wanted? Pregnant women who want to carry a pregnancy to term, suffering from a miscarriage, being denied care in an emergency room because the healthcare providers are afraid they might go to jail, and she's bleeding out in a car in the parking lot? She didn't want that. Her husband didn't want that. A 12 or 13-year-old survivor of incest being forced to carry a pregnancy to term? They don't want that. And I pledge to you, when Congress passes a bill to put back in place the protections of Roe v. Wade, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law. If Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban.
Donald Trump's response, for his part, to such brutal attacks from Harris did not go well. And finally, in one of these debates, included an actual fact check from one of the journalist moderators.
They have abortion in the ninth month. Execution after birth. It's execution, no longer abortion, because the baby is born. 52 years they've been trying to get Roe v. Wade into the states. And through the genius and heart and strength of six Supreme Court justices, we were able to do that. And now states are voting on it. Every legal scholar, every Democrat, every Republican, liberal, conservative, they all wanted this issue to be brought back to the states where the people could vote. Each individual state is voting. It's the vote of the people now. It's not tied up in the federal government.
There is no state in this country where it is legal to kill a baby after it's born. Madam Vice President, I want to get...
Thank you, Lindsay Davis. There was at least half a dozen lies in those remarks alone, but at least ABC's Lindsay Davis tried to live fact check at least one of them in a happy turn of events after some 8 years of debate moderators simply failing or refusing to do so with Donald Trump. He tried throughout the night to deride Harris as extreme, but he seemed to miss the mark time and time again and basically resorted back to claims about bands of marauding immigrant murderers terrorizing pretty much every town and city in the entire nation. And yes, apparently eating our pets or something. When ABC News hosts David Muir attempted to fact check the former Republican president on that point in real time, well, That did not go well for Trump either.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
I just want to clarify here. You bring up Springfield, Ohio, and ABC News did reach out to the city manager there. He told us there had been no credible reports of specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community.
Well, I've seen people on television.
Let me just say here, this is the
people on television say my dog was taken.
So you can hear Kamala in the background saying unbelievable. But anyway, he saw it on television. I'm guessing Fox News, so that sounds legit. As AP reports it, Trump attempted throughout the night to launch into the sort of freewheeling personal attacks and digressions from which his advisors and supporters have tried to steer him away. But that didn't work. And if they did that, he did not listen to them. Less than 2 months from Election Day, as vote-by-mail ballots are already being sent out, the debate on Tuesday offered what AP described as the clearest look yet at a presidential race that has been repeatedly upended. And I would agree, Harris offered what I saw as perhaps the best debate performance I have ever seen in any debate. And Trump's disaster was, frankly, only topped by Joe Biden's in late June that led him to drop out of the race. AP reported that Harris's performance by nearly every measure seemed the opposite of Biden's in June, with sharp, focused answers designed to showcase the contrast between her and Trump, with the vice president using her body language and facial expressions to confront Trump and express that she found his answers ridiculous, amusing, or both. Harris appeared intent on casting herself as a relief for voters seeking a break from Trump's acerbic politics, a contrast highlighted as Trump appeared to be set on his back foot by her needling. In one moment, Harris turned to Trump and said that as vice president, she had spoken to foreign leaders who, quote, are laughing at Donald Trump. And she said she had spoken to military leaders, quote, and they say you're a disgrace. She charged people were bored at his rallies and walking out early in droves, that foreign autocrats love him because they know they can manipulate him, play him for a chump by appealing to his vanity with gifts and kind words. Because I believe the Harris campaign catfished Trump into fighting for microphones to be muted when the other candidate was speaking, Trump, by and large, had to stand there and quietly take it. For 2 minutes at a time, while Harris gave her answers to questions from Muir and Davis, only to see Trump then launch into another incoherent rant when it was finally his turn to speak. That said, I think the debate was just about over before it began when both candidates walked on the stage. Harris walked over to shake hands with Donald Trump, who clearly had not intended to shake hands with her. And since it was the first time the two had ever met in person, she helpfully pronounced her name correctly. Did she say it correct? Did she get it right?
She did pronounce her own name correctly,
yeah.
Yes.
And frankly, after that, I do not think that Trump ever recovered. Between rants about dangerous immigrants eating house pets, he notably failed to answer, despite repeated attempts from the moderators to have him do so, if he would veto a national abortion ban, or who he sided with in Russia's war on our ally, Ukraine. He repeatedly sided with autocrats like Putin and Hungary's Viktor Orban and cited TV coverage by right-wing Fox News entertainment hosts like Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, and Jesse Waters when he was pushed for evidence to support any number of his ubiquitous lies throughout the 90-minute debate. There was a lot of ground covered in that debate. None of it seems, was good for the former president in what was the first one that I remember watching for years, I gotta say, perhaps the only one that I've watched for years that I actually did not want to see it end. But maybe I'm a glutton, and that's just me. We've got our roundtable special coverage band back together again to see how the others feel about it. Joining us now, you know him, you love him, our two longtime old-school blogger friends. Driftglass is the longtime liberal blogger who now hosts his weekly professional left podcast with his wife, Fran, otherwise known as Blue Gal. from what they lovingly describe as flyover country, Illinois. And, of course, Heather Digby Parton, best known as Digby. She's the award-winning columnist for Salon and proprietor of her much-beloved, long-running Hullabaloo blog. Welcome back to both of you guys.
Thank
Glad
you.
To be here.
Good to have you. Now, as usual, we're starting broadly, and we'll get into more specifics and actual issues where we can find them as we go. But to be honest, Heather, I was a bit trepidatious about going into that debate on Tuesday, knowing that Trump has been really in every debate that he has been in, a very good debater. I had to sort of put that word into quotes because he doesn't actually debate. He dominates. But he did not seem to dominate on Tuesday night. As I saw it, I actually thought he was dominated by Kamala Harris. Your broad thoughts on Tuesday's debate.
Well, there's no doubt about it. He was dominated in the debate last night. And I kind of disagree with you. I don't think he's a particularly great debater, even though he, you know, he's kind of, because he's a television guy, he knows how to, grab the attention mm-hmm. of everyone yeah. with the crazy stuff that he says. But I don't know. When you look back at the consensus after all the debates that he's done, the only one that he really dominated and was, you know, was widely believed that he had won was the one with Joe Biden. And I think we can all agree that he didn't really dominate. It's just that Joe Biden, you know, mm-hmm. failed so badly. It was so disastrous that he seemed to, by default, sort of dominate the debate. But nonetheless, setting that aside, yeah, I was trepidatious too. I mean, after the last one, you know, who wouldn't be? And the stakes are so high and the polls are so close. And, you know, I didn't know. We haven't seen Harris debate since she debated Mike Pence, which I thought she did quite well, by the way. I mean, I thought that was a good debate. And I thought she won that debate mm-hmm. Back in 2020. But that's really about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were those primary debates that she'd done that were, you know, but those aren't the same, right? Because there's all those people and you get one or two chances to say anything because she dropped out pretty early in the process. So I didn't know what to think. But boy, was I thrilled. I mean, this is, you know, I'm feeling the Kamala joy. Let's just put it that way. I mean, I am feeling it. Thrills up the leg, as Chris Matthews would say back in the day.
Yeah.
This was a really, really great debate for those of us who care about the future of this country.
Yeah.
Because she absolutely decimated him, and it was beautiful.
Driftglass, as noted, I thought it was all over with the handshake. But your broad thoughts overall, and maybe you can settle the dispute between Digby and I. Is Trump a master debater or not?
No, he's a rodeo clown, and he knows how to behave like a rodeo clown and jump up and down and huff and puff and make himself big like a pufferfish and yell and call people names, and that's what he's good at. That isn't a debate, but debates, you know, haven't been debates for a very long time.
Right.
Good point.
Right.
I think she rolled in there prepped to be a prosecutor of a person who is morally and legally unfit to hold any office in this country. And she prosecuted her case brilliantly. She sat down with her staff. I guarantee you went through all the keywords mm-hmm. like the Winter Soldier, mm-hmm. all the keywords that will trigger this lunatic into making dumb mistakes. Cause we know he can be provoked. And she just went in there like a matador and mm-hmm. poked him and poked him and poked him and kept her voice nice and even. Every time, he didn't just take the bait, he swallowed the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was over in the first 5 minutes. You knew where this was going. I thought her opening remarks were a little, tentative, but that's not surprising. You know, she's on the world stage and she's doing this thing. But once she kicked in her groove, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just a little more tentative. Once she got in her groove, it was like, oh, geez, she's just hitting him at will. And he can't go anywhere and he can't defend himself and he doesn't know what to do except do the garbage he does at his rally and throw out, you know, word salad nonsense.
And it didn't work. There was no audience to play to. There was no studio audience. Now, you know, for me, I wouldn't feel comfortable hiring this guy, honestly, you know, to run a Wendy's on the corner.
No.
But, you know, obviously about half of America seems to feel differently, but American presidential elections, maybe elections for all offices now, but definitely presidential elections, they seem like they're no longer about policies if they ever were. So, you know, they're about likability, they're about domination, and that seems to come into play in these in these debates. Am I wrong about that? And if that's the case, who was the most likable and dominant on that stage on Wednesday night? Because that seems like it should tell us who's going to win the election.
Well, you're looking at two different audiences. I mean, if you're looking at the people who were watching on Newsmax, then Donald Trump did a great job. Because he stood up there and told them all the lies they want to hear. And he said, Russia, Russia, Russia. And he said, they're eating the pets. And he behaved like the lunatic bully that they admire for some freakish reason. For any other sentient creature on Earth watching this, she kicked the crap out of him and kept kicking the crap out of him. And I was half out of my seat going, this is what we should have been seeing all along. Where was the person? Because all she was doing was telling the truth. All she was doing was telling him facts to his face and calling him what no one in his circle will ever call him, which is a disgrace and a criminal and creepy and old.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't know how to deal with that. He has, maybe once upon a time he did, but he is so far gone that he doesn't know how to handle people telling him blunt, unpleasant things about himself to his face. And it freaked him out.
Heather, I think that the Harris campaign buffaloed Trump, or at least the Trump campaign, in their insistence that the mics be left open. They really wanted the mics to be left open, or so they said. I think she did not want them left open. I think she tricked them into agreeing to mute them and then, you know, just murdered him every time that his mic was muted because he couldn't respond, you know, with stuff that actually killed him. He's weak. World leaders laugh at him. Our military leaders call you a disgrace, etc. Do you think that was on purpose? I mean, do you think they actually catfished him there?
Absolutely. I was saying that even at the time. I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Of course she's doing that. And it also stopped him from being able to claim that the problem was that the mics were muted since he was the one who ended up, you know, insisting that the mics be muted. And
right.
She was, oh, no, we want to have people. I thought it was brilliant. And it made perfect sense that they would do that. I mean, that was one of the reasons, I think, that she was able to get out, what she was able to get out, because he was not able to talk over her, which had been a big part of his debate performance in the past. And I think that they did understand that this was going to be good. And so she was prepared. I don't know who it was specifically that prepped her. I read some stories about it, but I don't remember if it was anybody we know or anybody, you know, that wouldn't, you know, be interesting to know about. But I do know that Donald Trump was prepped by, I believe it was Tulsi Gabbard, Matt Gaetz, and Laura Loomer.
Yeah.
So he had a really top flight team there, which I think showed in his performance that he was really, really well prepared by the best of the best. Because, you know, he only hires the best.
Yeah,
he's told us that.
Yeah. He had said, he wanted the mics. He would be fine with the mics on. It was his team who said, no, we want to turn them off. you know, please don't throw me in the briar patch. I mean, they really, Driftglass, who was Tuesday's debate for? Who were each of the candidates trying to reach? Undecided voters? Or are they actually trying to flip supporters of the other candidates at this point?
Well, I honestly think that what we saw was in Donald Trump, what you and I and Desi and Digby saw was the same Donald Trump we have been talking about and writing about for 9 years. This crazy racist lunatic shouting nonsense that we've been jumping up and down collectively screaming, why isn't anyone reporting this? Why isn't anyone talking about this? And this was the guy that was being reintroduced to the country because all of the things we've been begging the media to report on get killed by the, you know, Peter Baker, Maggie Haberman filter. It never makes it out into the country. It never makes it out to the public. So it's just, well, he has some policies here and she has some policies there, and it's a fierce debate. This was the first time that I think a lot of people got an unfiltered look at what Donald Trump is like right now. And that was the point, I think, of the debate. It's there are undecided voters and there are disinterested voters and there's people who are we've been told by their local media and by the national media that there's really not much difference, that there's policies on both sides, which is all BS. And I think that was the strategy of the Harris campaign, which was let the people who haven't decided yet or don't know or kind of just tuning in see what a complete freak this guy is.
And what was who was he trying to reach in that case?
Jesus, I don't know. He was reaching himself. He was talking to himself. He has a bag of old tricks. Everything is, you know, the best and the greatest and the most marvelous that's ever been, or the worst in history in World War III, Russia, Russia, Russia. And that's all he knows how to do. It's this, you know, hamster wheel in his head with 9 ad libs and 5 bumper stickers that worked at his rally. And so when she came after his rallies, that's when you knew, oh, this is going to get ugly. Oh. This is going to get very, very bad. Yeah. Because she did what, I forget who said it, hang a lantern on it. Go after his strong point. The only thing he's good at is rallying. Call his rallies boring and call him old and silly, and the people are tired of his nonsense. And then watch him. She found his launch codes.
Well, let's play one of those launch codes just to for people. If there's anyone out there who didn't watch that debate on Tuesday night or just wants to relive it, here's just one piece of that.
I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first, and I pledge to you that I will.
People don't go to her rallies. There's no reason to go. And the people that do go, she's busing them in and paying them to be there and then showing them in a different light. So she can't talk about that. People don't leave my rallies.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they do, and we've got video footage of it. That said, you know, exhaustion, they leave out of exhaustion and boredom, sick burns, certainly. But Heather, you know, I think that line about that you will never hear him talking about you, only about himself, I think that landed about as effectively as I think it possibly could for many of those so-called undecideds out there, if they actually exist.
Well, according to the, you know, the Oracle of Delphi, also known as the New York Times Siena poll, over the weekend, there are about, what they found was that 28% of respondents, I guess it was likely voters, mm-hmm. needed to hear more from her. And only 9% needed to hear more about Donald Trump. She just was an unknown quantity to mm-hmm. about 30% of the people there. So mm-hmm. to that extent, I think, you know, it probably helps her. You know, the debate was there to help her. But I got to tell you, that 9%, what they saw was pretty astonishing. And that kind of thing of her sort of, you know, revealing him, the thin-skinnedness about him, the you know, his inability mm-hmm. to kind of roll with the punches or ignore something that, you know, was clearly bait for him to take. And he just ran with it, as Driftglass says, you know, he took the bait and the hook. He just went all for it. He took the fishing pole. I mean, he took the whole damn thing. And so I think that, you know, there are undecided voters out there. There are some that were just, they had not been reminded of who he was. And then I think that there really were some who didn't quite know what to make of her. I mean, there's been a lot of propaganda about her over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I think that seeing her in this capacity, I mean, one of the things that I just keep saying about her and thinking about her that is just so surprising to me is that when she walked onto the stage, as you said, I think she put him back on his heels with that handshake. Mm-hmm. She just strode over there,
yep.
stuck her hand out, Kamala Harris. Right. You know, let's have a good debate. I mean, right. it was, whoa, you know, okay. And he looked shaken. I mean, he didn't know what to do, but right. she looks like a president. And last, we saw it at the convention when she gave her speech, she mm-hmm. came out there and she looked and sounded like a president. And last night she did as well, yeah. more than ever before. And considering the fact that she's a woman and that she's a black woman, I can't tell you how shocked I am that that just seems so natural to me. And when I see her, I am not sitting there going, oh, no, you know, thinking, right. which I often have done with women candidates.
And by the way, a really short woman. And she did not come across as short. No, nothing against short women.
She's saying. She's petite. We'll say she's petite.
She's black. She's a woman. She's short. She's got all of these things that are, well, 5'0", normal. All of these things that would normally, according to the Oracle of Delphi or whatever, you know, go against someone like that coming across as presidential. But she did. She did not look shorter than him on Tuesday night at that debate. I will spare you the questions about, since we're all pretty old here, any questions about Taylor Swift? Though I should note, I have been to a Taylor Swift concert. I hated it, but, and I know that's not going to help me if I decide to run, you know, with the Swiftie vote.
Well, you're not a teenage girl, so no one's really surprised by that.
But, Drift Glass, before we get to a break, based on your Twitter feed this week, I noticed that you were less than impressed, shall we say, by the other big endorsement that Harris recently received from Dick Cheney. Did I read your Twitter feed correctly on that?
Well, you did, because, you know, Dick Cheney's opinion is so important to us progressives, and he moves a lot of real estate. That's all I'm going to say. Dick Cheney's a monster. And all I could think of is if you ever wanted to mobilize 100,000 MAGAs who are going to stay home because they're creeped out by Trump or they've got something else to do or they're drunk, if you ever wanted to mobilize 100,000 MAGA voters to get out of their armchairs, go vote, show progressives as buddying up with Dick Cheney.
So what you're saying is that she loses more votes with that endorsement than she gains?
I think she handled it just right. She thanked them. She said thank you. And she said they value their country. And she moved on. I think any more than that gives the right an excuse to say, because I don't know if you know this, but the Republican base hates George Bush and really hates Dick Cheney.
Yeah, they act like they do. But do they? Do they really?
Well, all I can say is that Donald Trump, during a debate, said, you know, the Iraq war was George Bush's fault. And there's his damn brother right there. You really want that guy in the White House? And the base loved him for it because they wanted to be absolved of responsibility for Bush.
Yeah.
And the worst thing you can do is not just bring Cheney out of his crypt, but stack him up and say, you know, the party of George Soros and Bernie Sanders is now the party of Dick Cheney. You see, there is a deep state. There is a deep state. And they really are all in this together. And so, you know what, if he wants to come out and vote, he was the same nice thing, that's fine. I think she handled it just right. But, you know, the worst thing you can do as far as getting people on your own side just angry with you and getting people on the right going CCC conspiracy is to roll out Dick Cheney.
I'd love to roll him out. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with Drift Glass and Digby and Desi on our special coverage of the probably, I guess, one and only presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, at least until the 2028 election year. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the Bradcast. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I was at the Capitol on January 6th, and on that day, the President of the United States incited a violent mob to attack our nation's capital, to desecrate our nation's capital. On that day, 140 law enforcement officers were injured, and some died. The former president has been indicted and impeached for exactly that reason. Remember Charlottesville, where there was a mob of people carrying tiki torches, spewing anti-Semitic hate. And what did the president then at the time say? there were fine people on each side. When it came to the Proud Boys, a militia, the former president said, stand back and stand by. So for everyone watching who remembers what January 6th was, I say, we don't have to go back. Let's not go back. We're not going back. It's time to turn the page. And if that was a bridge too far for you, well, there is a place in our campaign for you.
Turn the page.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman for BradBlog.com. Special coverage of the first and perhaps last debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump on Tuesday night in Philadelphia. Speaking with our special panel, Heather Digby-Parton, Driftglass, and of course, as always, Desi. Driftglass, since it's another presidential debate, apparently we get to talk about the topic of healthcare again briefly.
Right.
You know, that only takes place during presidential debates. Trump was asked about his apparently 60 or so failed attempts to kill Obamacare while he was president and his years of promises to replace it with something better and cheaper. Here's a little bit of that.
You have long vowed to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. 9 years after you first started running, do you have a plan, and can you tell us what it is?
Obamacare was lousy health care, and we're going to replace it. But Democrats, they wouldn't vote to change it. If they would have done that, we would have had a much better plan than Obamacare. But the Democrats came up, they wouldn't vote for it. I had a choice to make when I was president. Do I save it and make it as good as it can be, or do I let it rot? And I saved it.
So just a yes or no, you still do not have a plan?
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now, and you'll be hearing about it in the not-too-distant future.
Driftglass, he has concepts of a plan 9 years on, and by the way, he saved Obamacare. Saved Obamacare?
Yeah, no. My wife and I are both on the exchange. We have a son with special needs who's doing very well. All of that was dependent on the Affordable Care Act, and we thank Barack Obama for that. We watched the debate very carefully. My wife was in tears every time the Republican Party tried to kill it, which was 61 times. Barack Obama, you might remember, went to the Republican retreat in Baltimore and took questions from them for an hour and a half, no notes, and answered them all. He said, you can modify this bill any way you want. You just have to meet certain basic criteria. And they said, screw it. And they've been trying to destroy it ever since Barack Obama proposed it. Donald Trump is instrumental. He ran on getting rid of it. And he's been lying about his plan for 9 years. And I'm glad they caught him in it because, no, he didn't save the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act transcended him and got past him thanks to John McCain, who Donald Trump disparaged endlessly and hated because he stood in his way of getting rid of it. We watched the Republican Party in the Rose Garden have a beer bust and celebrate what they thought was the end of my family's insurance.
Yeah.
And we will never forgive them for that, ever.
Mm. I did sort of have my own sort of revelation on Tuesday night watching all of this. Heather, with these subsequent remarks on the same issue by Donald Trump regarding, of course, as Bill notes, the very popular Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare.
We can do much better than Obamacare, much less money, but she won't improve private insurance for people, private medical insurance. She wants everybody to be on government insurance where you wait 6 months for an operation.
So those comments, Digby, about private insurance in the conversation about Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Obamacare is built on private insurance. It gives billions of dollars to private insurers. That was one of the things that progressives, you know, many of them used to hate about it. It occurs to me, is this possible that Donald Trump doesn't actually know what Obamacare is, how it works? Is it even possible that he doesn't know that at this point?
Of course it's possible. Of course it's possible. In fact, I'm assuming that that is the case. And I thought I had exactly the same thought when I heard that, which I'm going, oh, he really doesn't know how it works. And he doesn't know how anything works.
True.
I mean, let's face facts. He doesn't know what a tariff is. And that's his, that is his signature issue. And he still does not understand how they work. And I truly have concluded that it's not that he's doing this for effect, or that he has some, you know, it's some strategic sort of plan of his. He really doesn't get it. And he can't learn anything. The man was president for 4 years, and he never learned how Obamacare works, despite the fact that this was being debated day in and day out for, I mean, the first part of his administration. Mm-hmm. This was all they talked about. This was their big thing. You know, they did. They had that celebration in the House. Mm-hmm. And then we sat there through the entire debate in the Senate until finally in the middle of the night, John McCain, and give credit where credit is due, Collins and Murkowski too came over and voted to, you know, not to repeal it.
Right.
And throughout that time, he never had a plan. He said, remember, it was 2 weeks, we're coming out with a plan. It was just like the infrastructure bill that he was supposed to introduce.
Yeah.
And he would always say, it's going to be so much better. It's going to be so much cheaper. And he even said at one point, it's going to be so easy. It's so easy. You won't believe how easy this is going to be. And the best they ever came up with, and this didn't come from him, this came from the grotesque dystopian monsters in the Congress, in the Republican Congress, who came up with the idea of, you know, they were going to allow people to buy bad insurance instead of making it so that they weren't allowed to do it. That was mm-hmm. what they came up with.
Cheap, I mean, bad private insurance.
Cheap, yeah. Bad private insurance. Yes. So no, he absolutely does not understand it and thinks, I believe in his head, that Obamacare is Medicaid. I think that's probably what he thinks it is, and doesn't understand that it's a private insurance.
Yeah, I think he thinks it's government insurance.
Yeah, and you know, and he also on this tariffs thing that he clearly has never bothered to even learn, or has it stuck in his head as being completely wrong. During his first term, his tariffs against China actually helped to decimate the U.S. agriculture industry. Farmers required a $60 billion bailout during that time. So the fact that he still doesn't grasp that is just really dangerous for everybody. And he also doesn't understand how NATO works still.
Yeah,
right, that
right.
too.
That they're not paying in.
It's not a country
pot.
Club where you pay dues.
That's
right.
Not how it works. It's never how.
All right, Drift Glass, here's one for you. I fancy myself pretty good Trump translator, Trump whisperer, whatever you want to call it, in that I can generally understand what he's talking about during his rambles. Even though, you know, so
more
many
power to you.
Well, I do. I just sort of understand what it, and I often explain them to Desi. Oh, what he's saying is this and this. I mansplain them. I Trump-splain them to Desi. But here's one that I really can't, since we were talking about the rallies before, here's one I really can't explain. Hoping Drift Glass can save me here. This whole Hannibal Lecter thing, I think it's just because he finds that joke so funny. Oh, he'd really like to have you for dinner. I think he finds that so funny, but surely there must be something else to it. Please help me. Is there anything else to it?
There is nothing else to it. He thinks it's funny.
That's
and
it.
And it's not. it might have something to do with eating people. It might have something to do with pets. That's just, you know, it's one of those things that he just got, his brain got stuck on, you know, and windmills cause cancer and batteries will kill you and sharks will bite you. And it just gets stuck in his mushy brain and he can't stop saying it. And great. Keep talking, man. You know, he got 5 extra minutes of the debate. I thought, give him 10. Watch him hang himself is delightful. Yeah. I mean, never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake.
And he didn't even bring up Hannibal Lecter once. Yes, go ahead.
Aren't they saying that, I mean, I've heard a bunch of people say that they think that he has made the mistake of he's confusing asylum seekers with insane asylums. And that's what the Hannibal Lecter thing is all about. Now, I don't actually think that's the case. I think it's more like what you said, Brad, that he just thinks this is funny. I've never been able to quite make the connection that people are making on how they see that. I can see why someone would say that he's confused because he's that dumb. But in this case, I'm not convinced that that's what he actually thinks. But honestly, he should stop saying it, because everybody is kind of scratching their heads, including his own people, going, you know, kind of ixnay on the animal underlay, you know, not really working for you, dude. But he just keeps doing it.
All right.
So, you know, I think he loves it. He enjoys it.
Let me see if Desi can do some Trump translation for us here. It was actually, believe it or not, during Trump's answer to a question about Kamala Harris's change of position 4 years ago on fracking, when Trump responded with that clip that I played earlier about sex change operations for undocumented prisoners or something.
She wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens that are in prison.
So that was part of his answer regarding fracking or something. But Desi, Trump seemed to concede that while the Biden-Harris administration did allow and even expanded fracking in critical battleground states like Pennsylvania there, making America pretty much completely energy independent, Trump, he said he would have done it even more so.
If she won the election, fracking in Pennsylvania will end on day one. I would have been five times higher. But if she won the election, the day after that election, they'll go back to destroying our country, and oil will be dead, fossil fuel will be dead. We'll go back to windmills, and we'll go back to solar, where they need a whole desert to get some energy to come out of. You ever see a solar plant? By the way, I'm a big fan of solar, but they take 400, 500 acres of desert soil. These are not good things for the environment, as she understands.
Thank you.
We're out of time, sir. We're moving on.
Yes, please.
This is an Arby's. Des, that sort of reminded me of the maximalist comments that he also made about Israel, that, you know, if Kamala Harris is elected, Israel won't exist anymore in 2 years, much like if she's elected, there will be no more oil. But can you sort of unpack what his ranting was?
Everything is going to lead to World War III. I'm not sure if you're clear on that.
So
absolutely no, it is not possible for Trump to increase fracking or even oil production in general 4 to 5 times more than it already is. The U.S. is already at maximum production capacity now. And, you know, he's also previously pledged that he's going to cut energy prices in half, but he can't do that because that's not how global oil markets work, and because that would mean oil prices dropping down to like $20 or $30 a barrel. From where they are now, which is around $70 a barrel. And the U.S. oil industry domestically requires at least $60 a barrel to break even. So cutting it in half will decimate the U.S. oil industry. Now, you can question about the strategy, the wisdom of the strategy of the Biden-Harris administration and continuing to make sure that the U.S. is the number one top producer of oil. But that strategy appears to be mitigating energy prices running into an election in which Saudi Arabia and Russia have made clear that they would very much like to raise oil prices so that consumers are harmed right before the election. And also the thing about the solar plants taking
500 acres.
He was just making up stuff right then. It is not like that. No, utility scale solar footprint is nowhere near that size. And it is important to remember that the footprint of renewable energy is vastly, vastly smaller than coal mining alone. I mean, just look at the mountaintop removal damage of coal mining in West Virginia to see that.
And by the way, he didn't come up in the debate, but he likes to say that windmills kill so many birds. He feels terrible about
that.
The fact of it is that buildings kill more birds than windmills.
And so do house cats.
And this is true. But he's a builder of buildings, so he's responsible for killing more house cats than windmills. Climate change got very short shrift, I should note, with one single incredibly general question at the very end of the debate.
Of course.
Where she said, quote, what would you do to fight climate change? And Vice President Harris, we'll start with you. 1 minute for each. So that would be 1 minute at the very end of the debate for the most existential issue of our lifetime. So despite the fact that, you know, last week's extreme heat out west and continuing wildfires today, a new hurricane making landfall in Louisiana as we go to air, I guess we get to ignore climate change as well for the moment, Des. So that for you until the next Green News Report. Guys, right after the debate, Harris's campaign tweeted something like, that was fun, let's do it again, saying they'd love to have a second debate. When Tim Walz, her VP candidate, was asked about it, he said he was in favor. He said he didn't want to speak for Harris, but he'd love to see her do that to him every day. But I don't think she needs to debate him again, or that she should. So before we get out, we'll run around the table here. Should she? Does she really even want to, or is that another, you know, domination move by the campaign, expecting therefore Trump will decline since she's claiming to be so anxious to do it again? Driftglass?
It's like season two of The Bear. I want to see season three so bad. I want to see this happening on my TV screen once a week. I want to see her just beating the crap out of this guy like a rented mule once a week, and that'd be fine with me right up until, and after the election, beat him up into January, beat him up into February. That's a great thing. But I don't think she needs to. Yeah. I think she's established exactly who the president's, who's presidential and who's a lunatic. But I think she did frame it. She has framed every issue correctly as far as prosecuting the case goes. I am willing to debate you, you coward. What do you say? And the best he's going to have is, well, I have a concept of a debate, I'm sure.
Digby, want to get in on that?
Yeah, I think she did it. You know, it was another bait for him. It was another piece of bait. And his response sort of gives away the game. He says, oh, well, I won the debate. And so, you know, this is her trying to get me to debate again so she can beat me, you know, and none of that rings true. I mean, even his cult followers have to go, well, okay, you know, but I guess so. And so I don't really, I don't think he wants to do it for obvious reasons,
right,
but he may have to. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Harris is prepared to do it, and I think she will do it. And obviously I think she knows what she's doing. We'll just have to wait and see how the polls come out. I think that will do it. I don't think she needs to personally, but I think that they did this just, you know, I mean, it was part of their whole domination kind of strategy there. And yep. Because they did it right after the debate. They came out and said, let's do this again, you know, and I got it at the time, but I don't think she needs to at all. I mean, I think this is enough. There've been two debates. One took out Joe Biden. This one, she, you know, won hands down, but it's possible that we'll end up having another one. I wouldn't be surprised. Let's just put it that way.
Good point. I wouldn't be surprised either if they agree to a second debate, but I don't think she needs to. I mean, Trump, you know, it would not do him any good, as we all pretty much know. I mean, he didn't just have a bad night. He had a normal night. This is what he is like. Mm-hmm. And it is good for viewers to see that, for voters to see that. And clearly Harris has done a really good job, I think, in appealing to normal people and saying, hey, we can get back to normal stuff now.
I think she should take.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that what we're seeing, that I just saw a thing from Ad Impact saying that the ratings were something like 78 million people.
Is that right?
That's a lot of people. Yeah. And if that's the case, then, you know, she really doesn't need to do it. She made her point and she can move on. And, you know, she's got a lot of work to do. I mean, she's got to be barnstorming the country in these swing states. So, I don't know that she needs to do it, but
take the win and walk away. But if she sticks with her, you know, the microphone strategy, bait him into not accepting a debate. It was brilliant.
Exactly.
It worked last time, but, you know, be careful. These are risky games you're playing.
True.
Here. The of course, the polls going into the pre-election polls going into Tuesday night showed that the race was pretty much absolutely tied very quickly. Yes or no. Do you believe that is true? And will that change after Tuesday's debate, Digby?
I do not believe it's true. I think she is leading, although by much smaller than common sense would, you know, indicate that she should be. And I think the debate may actually change things a bit for her. I think she may have a bump out of it.
Drifty?
What Digby said.
I was going to say the same
smartly
thing.
Smartly done, all of you. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you joining us today. If there's not another presidential candidate, I do presidential debate. I do believe there's a vice presidential debate coming up, so you'll probably be hearing from us soon enough, sooner than you like. Heather Digby Parton is the much beloved longtime blogger and columnist known as Digby. You can find her work at salon.com and digbysblog.net, as well as on the site still known as Twitter at Digby56. You can find Driftglass on the Twitters as well. Over there, he is Mr. _ Electrico. Otherwise, you can check out his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. And, of course, his weekly podcast, at least weekly, that you can download at proleftpod.com. A delight to speak to both of you guys as ever. I look forward to doing it again soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, by the way, the vice presidential debate will be on October 1st. That's a Tuesday on CBS.
And Tim Walz versus J.D. Vance.
Get your popcorn.
So, so if you enjoyed Tuesday night's debate, presidential debate, well, I don't want to raise hopes too much for anybody. But
it should be interesting.
What could end up happening after October 1 when Walz versus Vance, we might be looking at a double murder after the Trump affair yesterday. And the but we'll see. But, you know, don't raise anyone's hopes. But it should be entertaining. Until then, thanks again to Heather and Drifty, and of course to our producer, Desi Doyen, for staying up all night and pulling those clips. Thank you so much, Desiree. Yeah. If you missed any portion of today's show, want to listen again, want to share it with someone you love or hate, you can do so anytime for free at bradblog.com. Everything we do here is made possible only by listeners like you. And I'm serious, not like NPR. Who gets all their money from the oil companies. I'm serious. We get all our support from you at bradblog.com. Hit a donate button or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. You can also drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. She is Green News Report.
Yep.
Until we see you next time, we'll see you there. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
She wants to do transgender operations on illegal aliens that are in prison.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.